Case number 08-5004, Public Citizen, Inc., Appellant versus Office of Management and Budget. Ms. Rosenbaum for the appellant, Mr. Shoaibi for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Adina Rosenbaum, and I represent the appellant Public Citizen, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The records at issue in this case contain the list of agencies that OMB allows to bypass its legislative and budgetary clearance processes, and the reasons for why those agencies are on that list. OMB has released part of the list of agencies, the list of agencies allowed by statute to bypass its clearance processes. But it has not released the list of agencies allowed by custom to bypass those processes, or the reasons for why agencies are on that part of the list. And OMB does admit that there are certain agencies that are allowed by custom, based on prior agency and OMB practice, to bypass the clearance processes. OMB argues that these records are exempt under FOIA Exemptions 2 and 5, and I would first like to address Exemption 2. To be withheld under the High 2 exemption, records must be both predominantly internal and their release must risk circumvention of agency law. Here, to begin with, the records are not predominantly internal. Based on OMB's descriptions of the records, these records are not ones that give instructions to the staff on how to detect violations of the clearance requirements. They contain those clearance requirements to begin with. The first record contains a list called bypass agencies, and that list was partially redacted. That record is issued by the Assistant Director for Legislative Reference and circulated by him to his staff, who actively apply and use that record. The second record contains a redacted list.
They apply it, but the records involved in Crooker were applied by the subordinates who received them, right? So, I mean, application by subordinates does not make a record non-internal.
Well, it depends how that is applied and the logical way that a person, a staff person, would apply a list of agencies exempt from the legislative clearance process. That's the title on the second record, would be to check and see whether a particular agency was in fact one of the records that is exempt from the clearance process. OMB, besides sort of vaguely saying that these records are used in policy discussions, OMB has not provided any other way that a staff person would use a record exempt, a list of records exempt from the clearance process, except to check and see whether an agency was in fact one of those records. OMB admits that there are records exempt from these processes. The records at issue in this case, though, are the only records OMB has that lists which agencies are exempt from the legislative clearance process. Circular A-19 and the OMB director's memo to the heads of the agencies, which OMB says are its policy overall on legislative clearance, do not contain a list of the agencies that OMB allows to bypass the legislative clearance process. So these records would seem to be the records OMB is actually applying to the other agencies in determining whether they are exempt from that process.
But it's got to be clear from the line between Jordan and Crooker is obscure to me, at least. But it certainly is the case that subordinates receiving a record can use it in their conduct outside the agency without the record becoming external or non-internal.
I think the line is whether they're using it to determine what is required outside from those outside the agency, or whether they're just using it to determine how they personally react to things they receive from outside the agency.
Well, or what if it were to guide them in terms of what they send to the agency, right? Now, it's not react from the agency, but what communications, if any, they would have with the agency.
Well, if the communications with the agency would have an effect on the agent, what the agencies need to do. So if they're sending something to the agency saying, we think you need to transmit your legislative proposals, reports, and testimony to us, and then the agency, based on that and based on the requirements, are required to submit those proposals, that is requirements being placed on the agency based on this list. And when the
But the hypothetical I was giving you was not confined to imposition of requirements. It related to choices by OMB personnel about what communications they would make to agencies, independently of requirements imposed on agencies.
I think that it's hard to separate what gets sent to personnel from what to other agencies from what the content of those communications would be. So if what's being sent to other agencies is being used to regulate those agencies, to tell other agencies what the requirements are, to ask something of those agencies, to let them know what OMB's expectations
are. What about simply deciding not to communicate with a particular agency?
If deciding not to communicate with the agency has repercussions for what that agency is required to do, then I think the list is being used to regulate that agency. And when a list is applied to those outside of the agency to regulate what is required from those outside of the agency, it is not predominantly internal. And I want to...
What if the only... of course, all relationships in a broad sense could be said to have a regulatory effect because they handing out carrots produces conduct just as beating with sticks does. But what if the carrot in question is simply providing information to the agency or not providing information to the agency?
I again think that would depend on the ramifications of providing that information, on what the information is and how it affected.
Information is very valuable in Washington, right? As around the world.
And again, I want to go back though to what these lists are, and the title of the second record is Agencies Exempt from the Legislative Clearance Process. So this does seem to be, based on its title, a list of agencies exempt from the clearance process that again goes to what is being required of the agencies, of whether or not those other agencies have to clear their materials by OMB. And fundamentally, these records are not predominantly internal, but even if they were, they still would not be exempt under the HITU exemption because OMB has never demonstrated how the release would help other agencies evade the law. It's certainly not clear to me at all how they could do so. Again, as far as we can tell, based on OMB's descriptions of the records, the records do not contain instructions on how to detect violations of the law that would enable other agencies to evade detection if they themselves chose not to follow the clearance requirements. They contain the requirements themselves. They contain the list of agencies that are allowed to bypass the clearance processes. Knowing which agencies OMB considers not to be bound by the clearance requirements would not help any agencies to evade the law. It would not help agencies that are on the list to evade the requirements because those agencies are not bound by the requirements to begin with. That's what it means that they're on the list. They're agencies exempt from the process.
Yeah. You frame this evade requirements in terms of jealousy, but Certainly, in terms of ordinary bargaining between between entities, information as to how one entity has treated other entities that may or may not be similar is a valuable resource and enables people to make claims of equal treatment, which you may characterize as just a matter of jealousy, but actually we're sort of in the equal treatment business, and I think if we're doing something more than responding to arguments about jealousy.
And other agencies are fully allowed to go to OMB and say, we think we're being treated unfairly. They're allowed to go to Congress and say...
The force of the claim can be strengthened, or strengthened by access to information about how others are treated.
Their claim that they should be treated differently would, in fact, I agree with that, be strengthened by information about how other agencies are treated. But the standard for high exemption 2 is not whether other agencies would go to OMB and say, we disagree on how we've been treated, please allow us to clear 2. That's not evading the requirements.
It's the flip of that, right?
It would be
agencies saying, look, you've cut slack for agencies A, B, and C. Why not for us? We're similarly situated.
Asking to be exempted from the requirements is not evading the requirements. Agencies, the high 2 exemption is not meant to not allow other agencies to ask for equal treatment. It's meant to not allow them to be able to evade the requirements, essentially not to allow them to be able to figure out how they can break the requirements and not be detected. And there's nothing in these records that would allow the agencies to do so.
This may seem like a simple question, but I just want to be clear about this. You have these circulars, and if the circular covers a box, what I'm not clear of is that if you have all of the agencies that are statutorily required, why isn't the assumption that the others OMB considers not to be statutorily required? I'm just trying to understand the wealth of information that's at issue here.
What OMB has given us is the list of agencies that by statute are allowed to bypass the processes.
Right.
So the assumption might be that other agencies are not allowed to bypass the processes, except that OMB has stated that there are some agencies that based on prior agency and OMB practice, it allows to bypass the processes. And
even though they are statutorily required?
Well,
they
would be required by Circular A-19, the OMB circular, to go through the clearance process, except that OMB allows them not to. And the fact that we haven't been given the full list of agencies that OMB allows to bypass this process is most clear by on page 109 of the joint appendix. This is the second page.
I guess all I'm trying to determine is it's not something you can determine from other sources of information.
No, because exactly what has been redacted from this page, we believe, is a list of agencies that OMB allows based on its own custom to bypass these processes. So this is not something that we could do research in the U.S. Code to find, because we've been given the ones where the U.S. Code says they can bypass. What we haven't been given is the one that, despite there being nothing in the U.S. Code saying these agencies are bypass agencies, that OMB nonetheless allows to bypass the clearance processes. I believe I'm now going into my rebuttal time, so unless you have any other questions, thank you.
Counsel for Appley.
May it please the court. Alexander Shoevi for the Office of Management and Budget. Your Honors, we believe that the district court correctly found these documents to be covered and exempt under FOIA exemption number 2. This decision by the lower court was made after an in-camera review of these documents. And after that in-camera review, the lower court determined that these documents were internal, and that release of these documents would substantially risk circumvention of regulation or the OMB purpose.
And I'd just like to clear up one other point. Mr. Jukes, when he's sending this document out, is sending it to his subordinates?
This document actually, Your Honor, is circulated throughout OMB. It goes to not just subordinates, it goes to heads of divisions as well. It is, and that's an important point, I'm glad you brought that up. It is definitely not just to subordinates. It goes throughout the entire agency. I think it's important here, particularly after listening to what appellant said in her argument, to give some kind of framework for how this all works. For over 70 years, since President Franklin Roosevelt signed Executive Order 8248, creating the Bureau of the Budget, which then became OMB, OMB has had a function, this division has had a function of coordinating legislative and budgetary proposals that various agencies want to submit to Congress for the President. Their job is basically to look at these proposals and make sure that they are in accordance with the President's overall budgetary and legislative policy. That's what they do. And what is extremely important to understand here, and I think is muddled somewhat by what was said in the first argument and in the briefs, is what OMB looks at is legislative proposals. It doesn't look at agencies. It looks at legislature proposals, testimony that comes from agencies, and determines how those should be treated and whether those comport with the executive branch policy. It sends these out to other agencies. It reviews the testimony. It goes through this whole internally deliberative process of deciding whether this legislation is something that's going to go forward. OMB does not have the power to make any decisions about an agency and as to whether that agency has the right to go around OMB. That's been decided. Executive Order 8248, Circular A-19, the May 15, 2001 memo to all the different agency heads clearly states that they're supposed to go through OMB. The laws, when Congress reached in and passed these laws saying that certain agencies, for whatever reason, because they felt they were independent, particularly regulatory, and would allow them to go around.
What's this got to do with the issue before us?
Yeah.
The question before us is whether we all agree, right, that there are agencies that do not go through this process, right, that are exempt.
Right.
Okay, so the question is the list of those agencies releasable under FOIA?
That has been answered in the positive. What's been turned over, and the reason I gave this background is this, it does have to do with what we're talking about, because when Congress reaches in and passes these laws, Congress gave certain agencies the right to go around OMB.
Right.
That information has all been turned over. All the parts of documents 1 through 14 that list the agencies that have statutory bypass for both legislative and budgetary proposals.
Is that a predominantly internal document?
That is a predominantly internal document, yes.
It
states what the legislature has done. In other words, OMB, it's internal, but it is legal. It's a statement of what the law is. OMB, again, this is the point that I can't emphasize enough, is that OMB doesn't have the power.
Excuse me, if it's predominantly internal, why isn't it exempt?
It was turned over. OMB decided to turn this information over because it was simply a statement of what appellants could look up if they went to the law and looked up the statutes as to what agencies have been given the right to go around OMB and directly to Congress.
Uh-huh.
That's out there. There's nothing internal. I mean, it's internal because it's considered by OMB.
And then why is the list?
Law.
Why is the list then? I see. Okay.
The information they're looking for. Let me describe it this way. It is basically OMB's internal discussions of how certain agencies view their role, whether or not they can go around Congress without first going to OMB. That's what this is. There is no...
Well, we have an example of that, right, that's actually been released. This is the USIP, right, which got mistakenly...
Mm-hmm.
Where's right? Okay, so this is an example we can talk about here because it's already public, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it says, Okay, so the first thing it says is that there's no explicit provision contained in the statute, right? Which states that the USIP is outside of the structure. So that's a statement of, that's a legal statement. All it says is, which is true, there's no, nothing in the statute about it. And then it says, but USIP has so interpreted the statute, right? So what this states is what the USIP's position is. Why is that internal? Why is a statement of a other of another agency's position a predominantly internal statement, internal document for OMB?
It's an internal document. That is OMB's.
Particularly since I presume somebody could file a FOIA request with USIP and get it.
Well, this is. I don't think so because this particular part of this statement. Is OMB's, what their thoughts of how USIP is interpreting the statute. Okay, it's OMB's internal thoughts. It's nothing, the statute is stated, USIP is an internal independent nonprofit corporation, and it states specifically what the statute calls for. And it says there's no explicit provision allowing them to go outside it. Then it says, based on our observations, based on our internal discussions, based on what we've seen internally, we think that USIP believes they can go around. But that's not law, that's not statute, that's not a regulation, and that's nothing that, and again, this is the point that I need to address that they've made, is that OMB doesn't decide that somebody can or can't go around. Only Congress does that. OMB
Suppose the document they were requesting here looked just like, was nothing more than the list. It was exactly like the list that OMB already released of agencies with statutory bypass authority, and it had another list. It wasn't embedded in any manual or internal memo or anything. It's just a one-page list of other documents that do not submit to the OMB process. Just a list. No guidance to agencies, officials, nothing. Would that be predominantly internal?
I think that would remain predominantly internal.
Why?
I think.
Well, it's just a list of facts. It's a list of agencies that don't participate in the process. Why is that predominantly internal? There's no guidance to the agency. There's nothing.
Well, I tell you, it fits into, I believe, what the lower court looked at in their determination that this is protected under Exemption 2. Exemption 2 is a two-step analysis. And the first analysis, of course, is an internal, and it is an internal document that stays within OMB. But the second step
if it's not predominantly internal, you don't get to the second stage, right? You don't get to the second question. You have to release it.
Well, it's...
Right?
Let me just say...
That's what I was asking you. If the list I hypothesize is not predominantly internal, it has to be released, doesn't it?
I think you have to get to the second step. It's a two-step analysis. You have to do both steps of the analysis.
The agency loses on step one. What would the point of going on to step two be?
Well, yeah.
Lost me there.
So why don't we focus on that question then? Why would the list
both.
I describe, it has to be both for the agency to avoid releasing it. If it meets the first one, then it has to be released, correct?
I'll agree with that.
Okay. So why isn't the list I hypothesize, why is it predominantly internal? It's just a list. It's in someone's file.
Because here's... this.
It's not part of any internal memorandum.
It doesn't have any external effect, though. It's simply an internal observation.
But it describes the relationships between OMB and external agencies.
It describes what external agencies, what OMB believes agencies think about their own position.
No. Now you're straying from my hypothetical. There's no text. It's just a list. It's just a list of the X number of agencies that do not participate in the process.
But the only reason that they make the list, Your Honor, is because OMB believes that they believe that they have a certain ability to get around OMB before going to Congress. It's not a list of anybody who can do this. It's a list of OMB's beliefs that this is, based on our observations, this is what they must
think. It's a factual list. It is a list of the agencies which, in fact, do not participate in the process, correct? There's no doubt about that.
It is a list of agencies
that do not,
OMB through the years has observed, have not at times submitted.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Does the list we're talking about, we have to be careful here, I guess, but does the list we're talking about include agencies who do not, in fact, participate in the clearance process? The answer is yes, right?
I would say.
Factually. This is just a factual question.
Part of the
reason, not anything about what they think or OMB thinks, but they, in fact, aren't part of the process.
The reason I can't answer that in the affirmative is because we don't know. OMB is the one.
OMB has to know whether or not they submit materials to them for clearance. Of course you know. That's how you made up the list.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The list, again, is...
I'm doing a hypothetical question.
You're doing a hypothetical
question. My list, let's stick with my hypothetical. It's a one-page list. It's got, for purposes of discussion, it's got eight agencies on it. These are the eight agencies that, beyond the statutory ones, don't participate. That's a factual list. Nobody's thoughts are on it, nothing. Now, is that a predominantly internal memo? It's describing the relationship between OMB and other agencies in the government.
Yes, it is internal.
Why?
It's internal because it has never been released outside of OMB.
Well, now, wait. Let's start.
Nobody else
But that can't possibly be a reason for protecting it from disclosure, because then no document that hadn't been released could be disclosed under FOIA.
I'm giving you all the reasons.
I want you to give me reasons that make sense.
Okay, well, here's...
Okay, that one doesn't. Try another one.
Here's a reason that makes sense.
Okay.
This list can change. This is not a list of a decision that's been made that these are the agencies.
Now, are you moving now to Exemption 5?
Excuse me?
Are you moving now to Exemption 5? Are you saying this isn't final?
I am moving to Exemption 5 to some degree, but
I want to stick with Exemption 2.
But part of the reason that it's...
Okay, I want to stick with Exemption 2.
Let's stick with Exemption 2.
Okay. True, the list may change someday, but the question is, is the list of agencies, a factual list of agencies who do not participate in the process, predominantly internal? I haven't heard the... Maybe
factual,
it is, but you haven't given me a reason.
A list of agencies,
yeah,
that OMB, based on its own observations and internal discussions, has found to be a list of agencies that in the past have not. I assume that if it's labeled as such a list, that is something that conceivably would not be.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But
so then why isn't the simple answer here that what might be internal, if it is, I'm not sure, is the surrounding text and the discussion and the descriptions to the agency about what it should and shouldn't do with the list. But yet the list itself could be released because it's just a list of facts.
Your Honor, you're making a jump here, and I don't blame you for making it because I assume that you have not reviewed the list. But the list is, again...
You assume what?
Pardon?
You assume what?
I assume that you have not reviewed...
No, that's not true. Okay. We have the documents.
All right, okay. All right, yeah. Well, if you have the documents, then I can say that what these documents, my understanding of what these documents, how I would explain the content of these documents are, they contain agencies that... And the description underneath is how these agencies interpret their ability to get around OMB.
Okay. I'll try once more, and then I won't pursue it, okay? I was asking you whether perhaps under Exemption 2 and under FOIA, it's an agency's obligation to release any segregable portions of a document that can be, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So my question is whether these documents might contain some material that is protected under Exemption 2 because it's predominantly internal. Factual statements like the list minus the text, which isn't. That's my question.
Okay. And
you've suggested already that under my hypothetical, the document would not, the bare list, the bare list containing facts of agencies that do not participate would not be predominantly internal. So why couldn't that part, that information be released in the rest of the document, assuming for a minute that the rest of the document is in fact predominantly internal, be redacted?
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be evasive here.
Okay.
It depends on what you consider to be a fact, okay? This is an observation on how an agency, how OMB believes an agency acts. If it is, there cannot be a list of agencies that can get around OMB. The only list of agencies that can get around OMB is statutorily determined. This list is a list of agencies that OMB has looked at and said, agencies on this list see themselves in such a way that they think they can get around Congress. But it is not a factual list of agencies that can. And again, it's a list that is solely based on its own internal discussions and observations. It is not, I don't think it rises to the level of fact. Because they can't. We may think that they think they can, but the only way that they can is if Congress says they can.
Yeah. And Public Citizen says their position is they think that this document is used to determine which agencies OMB requires to submit materials to it, right? That's their position.
And they're wrong.
Well, so if they were right, would it be predominantly internal?
If they're right, would it be predominantly internal?
If they are correct about the way it's used, would it still be predominantly internal?
I think that there would be an argument that it would not be, because it still has no effect on the public.
Excuse me. Are you making the distinction here now because it just affects other agencies and not the public?
If I had to go there, but I don't think I have to go there. But if I had to, yes, I would say that's if it were.
Then, if that's the case, if that's your position, is anything OMB does subject to FOIA?
Your Honor, again, these internal documents are internal because, again,
I was curious about your point that there's a difference between documents that affect the public and documents that affect other agencies, and I thought I heard you say that these are not subject to release because they're predominantly internal because they just affect other agencies of government. Isn't that what you said?
Based on the hypothetical that you're presenting, yeah. I think that's an argument that would be made. If these, in fact, were a list of agencies that OMB had decided somehow, which it can't decide, but if somehow it had been decided that they can get around and it were such a factual list and it had an effect on other agencies, I think there would be an argument that it would still be internal. But I don't think we need to get there because OMB does not have the power to make that determination. Any list that OMB has to be OMB's own internal discussions as to what it believes.
OMB has the power to go to the president and say, there are a number of agencies that aren't participating in this, and we think you should issue an executive order or go to Congress and get legislation to require.
OMB doesn't look at agencies, it looks at statutes. I mean, that's what I started with, and that's what I really wanted to make so clear. Because
you're not really answering Judge Tatel's question, because I have to say it's something that's bothered me throughout this case.
Okay.
You depict a bunch of agencies as resisting what appear to be duties they have under executive orders and statute. And OMB just lying down on the road, letting them run over it. And I guess I'm really puzzled as to why that happens. I mean, I realize that among agencies, law is not exactly law, but the supine character of OMB, as you depict it, and the brief depicts it, is puzzling to me.
Well, I will say again that OMB does not, cannot, has not, will not make any decisions about agencies and their ability to go around OMB. Those decisions.
Doesn't it, as a practical matter, do that if it fails to insist that they perform duties which, under the law, they are to perform?
It has the discretion to look at statutes and make determinations with regard to particular statutes. It can make a decision, for example, when a statute comes to it, that this particular statute does not need to go through a review process that another statute does in order to comport with the presidential's overall, with the president's overall policy.
Yeah.
It can do that. And that's the reason why it doesn't, there is no requirement that it look at a certain piece of legislation. But most importantly, it doesn't look at agencies. It looks at legislation. It may consider a certain agency, a certain piece of legislation, and determine this is one we're not going to review for whatever reason. It has the ability to do that.
I don't understand.
Let me get you clear. Are you saying then that OMB, even with respect to these agencies, not statutorily exempt, will, for particular pieces of legislation, exercise its review function?
If it chooses that it should at a particular time, it will. There is.
Well, does it ever?
Does it ever?
I don't understand at all. Maybe Judge Tatel has some personal experience. I certainly have had personal experience working with OMB, and I don't understand your answer to Judge Williams at all. I mean, OMB used to say you have no legislative proposal until we've approved it. All right, now, if the agency takes the position that they don't have to come through OMB, how would you ever know until some congressman or senator introduces it?
Well, that oftentimes is how they might learn about it. I think that's correct.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in the real world, I don't understand your answer to Judge Williams. I mean, where you have discretion to say, I understand if the Justice Department wants to submit legislation to Congress, OMB may say as to a particular piece of proposed legislation, we don't need to clear that because it's clearly consistent with the president's program. But that's not what we're talking about here.
I think you're right, Your Honor, in that in some circumstances, the only way they would find out about it is once it's gotten to Congress. But I think there are circumstances, and I've spoken to OMB about this, in which they find out about legislation before that.
So looking at Mr.
And then what do they do?
Well, they can, if they find out about a piece of legislation and they feel that it's legislation that they don't need to review,
what
they can let
the
it go
other?
By.
What about the flip side? What about when they decide it's legislation they ought to review?
They always have the power, as granted by the executive order, by the circular, by the memo of February 15, 2001, to say, we want to look at this. And they can always do it. And that's why this information is not final.
And are you saying they do it?
I'm saying that they...
You say they have the power to do it, but... You seem to be depicting a scenario in which they have the power and never exercise it with respect to a listed group of agencies.
Another thing is, I think OMB exerts its power in various different ways. All right. I mean, they're, you may want first crack at something, but clearly the administration can testify against something. It can cut the budget. There are all kinds of powers that OMB has in terms of what the president is to support. And that's why I'm back to where Judge Tatel is, sort of what is this list? And going back to Mr. Jukes's affidavit, he says, along the lines of what you've been arguing to us today, that these are documents that are a starting point for discussion within OMB. So as to the reference that Judge Tatel made to USIP, the document says, well, this is USIP's thoughts. Now, this document goes throughout OMB, you say, so whoever the staff person is working with USIP calls up USIP and says, maybe we didn't do this in the past, but this is a new administration. We want to see all your stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
this change administration is a key point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, this list is a changing list, but are you saying... I mean, it's lopping over into the other exemption, but it's OMB's mental processes and observations, but it's not a fact. I mean, it doesn't say that OMB doesn't or won't require.
Exactly.
So that it's useless information to the public. That's what I'm trying to understand.
It's useless information to the public. There's nothing final about it. There's nothing precedential about it. It would be confusing to the public. It would give them an impression that is incorrect, because the only correct impression is that the only agencies that can go around Congress are agencies that Congress has said can go around Congress.
So are you saying that only information under FOIA that's disclosable is information that wouldn't confuse people?
No.
You know, if we had that standard, we'd have many fewer FOIA cases.
I didn't say that, one factor. But I think the second prong of Exemption 2 is extremely strong here. And again, after the in-camera review that the lower court did, they agreed that release of this material.
But we've done the same in-camera review.
I would say to you that an in-camera review should demonstrate that if these documents get out there, other agencies can look at them and say, well, maybe we won't go around OMB.
You've moved on. Can I ask you, you mentioned a change in administration. I was curious to know whether the government's position in this case was evaluated under the president's new executive order.
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh. And no change in position was taken.
No change in position, because the executive order perfectly allows for the use of the non-exemptions to the FOIA. And this squarely fits within the exemptions. And this is, again, I think something that should not be released for the reasons stated in our brief with regard to Exemption 2 and Exemption 5.
I have two questions for
you.
One is, you have said that with respect to these agencies on the non-disclosed list, OMB does not necessarily allow them to refrain from submitting materials, right?
Yes, right.
Okay. Are you representing that OMB has ever, while a list was extant, not replaced by a subsequent list, in fact done that? In fact, said with respect to an agency, we must see, we hear you're brewing up some legislative proposal, we are entitled to see it. Has that happened?
I know that what has happened is that agencies that are on the list of agencies OMB has discussed and think they can get around OMB have come to OMB and said, we would like to have this reviewed, and they've been removed from the list. I know that's happened.
Okay. But what about the other? In other words, with the initiative coming from OMB,
If
you have someone from OMB there, but he's remaining silent.
Go ahead. Stuart Bender from OMB.
Please. Your Honors, may it please the Court, I'll just be very brief because of the time. I'm limited in what I can say because these are non-public information. But there have been instances, they are rare, but they do happen, where OMB can decide that a matter that is being proposed. And again, this whole thing is basically about who gets to talk to Congress without talking to OMB first. And OMB can decide that there can be an instance where an agency has a proposal to Congress and OMB won't opine on it for a variety of reasons. And I don't want to, very obliquely, there was a situation many, many years ago during a transition in government where a proposal was sent up and
up to Congress.
Congress.
By an agency.
A proposal sent up by an agency. And OMB decided that because it was a transition and things were moving over to a new administration, that particular proposal that was being sent up would be in accord with that incoming administration, and it was not commented on. It was allowed to bypass, and it was a very informal process. OMB could have decided, they want to vet it, but on that particular instance, because of what it said, they let that go.
Okay, I guess I'm more interested in the incidence of the opposite scenario,
sure,
where you have an agency on the bypass list and OMB gets word of a brewing proposal and says, we really must see that.
I got you. And actually, one thing about this list, about these memos, they're not only sent to the staff of Jim Jukes, but they're actually sent to the agency director, they're sent to the OMB director, deputy director, the very senior most levels of OMB. And the director or deputy director could decide today, tomorrow, this hour, you know, I don't agree with that. I think we need to revisit that. So the list is not fixed, and the agency could, OMB could.
But the list is the list at this moment in time.
Right, but it's not fixed. It's very fluid.
It's not an advisory list. It's the list at the moment. True, it could be changed, but it's the list, right?
But I need to be clear on that.
Isn't that right?
The list.
It is the list. I just pick up what you said. This is the list that, except for the statutory agencies, which explains which agencies are free to go to Congress on their own, correct? Or in fact go to Congress on their own. That's what this list does.
I want to make sure I understand your question. The list reflects a given point in time. There have been changes to the list through the years,
I understand,
albeit minor.
But as of today, Friday the 13th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, not Friday the 13th, because it's whatever the date the document is in the record. Whatever that date is, that was the list of agencies that, beyond statutory exemptions, they're the ones who submit materials to Congress without OMB clearance, correct? That's what that list is.
The list reflects OMB's customary practice and its interpretation of what the agency sees as their practice.
Let me try again.
Sure.
Someone at OMB had to write the list, mm-hmm. but isn't it a list of agencies which, in fact, submit to Congress without OMB clearance?
You're right to a point. I beg to differ on the last part. It is a list that reflects agencies that can make proposals, that can talk to Congress.
Right.
But that list is not permanent or fixed in that it can always be reviewed or revised or questioned.
But as of the date of the list in the record, that was the list. True, today it might be different. There might be more agencies on it or fewer, correct?
Well, you're absolutely right. The list.
But as of that date, that was the list of agencies that were free to submit materials to Congress without OMB approval, correct?
I'm sorry, I missed your last point.
Without OMB approval.
Right, the list does reflect.
Now, there was a factual list, right?
Well,
in other words, it's a list that describes as of that day.
Well, it's.
Let me just finish my question. OMB's relationship with other agencies of the executive branch, right?
The list, you're giving the list a more concrete nature. It really is much more fluid. It would be as a list.
I accept your argument that it could change from day to day.
Right.
But as
could
of
you tell
day,
us something about
but
the
I
process
just ask
of change.
The question, though. This is what I want to understand. It's relevant to what we're discussing now. If this memo from Mr. Dukes goes to the agency director for one of these agencies on the list, as I understand the affidavit and what you and your colleague have been telling us, that agency director could say, I am now informed that here's what this agency thinks about its obligations. However, because the president has made a top priority of X, and that's within this agency's purview in some regard, I, the agency director at OMB, am going to insist that we clear that before that agency sends something up. In other words, it could be specific as to a piece of legislation as distinct from a list that says this agency can send anything it wants to the Hill without OMB having any role of pre-clearance.
And I agree with you. You're correct. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to hear more about the process of change. Suppose a subordinate official at OMB thinks that there is legislation brewing that OMB ought to get at with respect to an agency which is on this list, a bypass list. What are the options of such an official?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. And actually, it gets to Judge Taylor's question.
What?
I said it's an excellent question.
Oh, yeah, I thought so, too. I
just didn't Therefore, I'd like an excellent answer.
Wonderful. I hope I can oblige. And actually, it gets to Judge Taylor's question in a way, too, about isn't this factual. You've asked, what would happen if a program associate director, one of the most senior people within OMB, finds out that there's legislation at an agency that's on the list, is sending up, and says, no, we want to see that. We want to vet that. It's a proposal, and we want to make sure that they talk to us before they talk to Congress
right.
about this proposal, whether it be legislative or budgetary. They can have a conversation with the program examiner at OMB, who oversees that agency, and to say, we want to talk to you about this. And in that case,
I got confused about the
sure.
people in that conversation.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. I apologize. Let me try again. You can have the program associate director, which is one of the most senior people within OMB. It's a non-career political position. Decide, no, on this particular proposal, we want this agency to talk to us and to coordinate with us. And the coordination process may be having to talk to OMB or having OMB take that proposal and ask Justice for their opinion or ask other agencies that may be affected
okay.
by their opinion.
Yeah, well,
and then that the program examiner, every agency in the federal government has a program examiner. It's basically a GS-13 level employee within OMB who their responsibility is to overview the budget and overview the programs of that agency, make sure they're functioning
right.
effectively and monitor that. And they can pick up the phone, call up that agency and say to that agency, on this particular proposal, we want you to talk to us
okay.
before you go up to the Hill.
Okay, two things. The subordinate person within OMB can initiate such an OMB initiative, is that what I'm saying? Initiate at least in the sense of speaking to a high-level OMB official,
oh, yeah.
right?
The basically frontline-level OMB program examiner
right.
certainly can talk to the
okay. Could the frontline officer independently, because he might not have enough clout, but can he try without clout to get the agency to provide the draft?
Certainly. Actually, OMB is a very small agency. We have a flat hierarchy, and our
uh-huh.
Our program examiners, even though they're line people, have strong opinions and actually express their forthright opinions to senior managers all the time.
Senior managers in OMB, but also to people outside the agency.
Oh, to people at the other agency, sure, absolutely.
Yes.
They
okay.
can call
and
them
this,
up, absolutely.
And not only can this happen, but it does happen.
Happens every day, every hour. OMB staff are communicating with government agency officials
okay.
all the time.
Yeah, but specifically are communicating with officials on agencies on the bypass list and getting something from them.
Well, they're
getting, say, a draft.
They can if they want to. They can call them up and get a draft.
And they do or they can, and it never happens.
That actually is very fluid. It depends on...
It can't be fluid, the proposition
right.
of whether it ever happens, right? That's
no,
not
right.
A,
no,
that's
it
an
happens,
issue susceptible to fluidity.
Different ways at different times. There have been instances where agencies have gone up to the Hill and OMB finds out afterwards. There are situations where agencies will, as a courtesy, let OMB know.
Right, I understand those. It's more the OMB initiative that I'm interested in.
Sure. Okay. So let's say an agency comes to OMB and says we're going up to the Hill directly, but we want to let you know as a courtesy what we're doing.
I understand that.
OMB can come back and say no, we want you to clear with us. So they can revisit that and they can.
I see. In other words, the agency initiates, but on a basis which does not encompass real review, and OMB, you're saying, insists on review.
Right.
No courtesy. This is judgment.
And OMB can do that. And in that situation,
and it does.
It has done that. It has done
okay.
that.
Okay.
And the one last thing I wanted to point out is that your list that you're talking about as being factual then really does change, because then that agency, even though it's still on that piece of paper, really wouldn't be there for that particular purpose. It would go through the vetting process of OMB. So the list really does change. It is a list of agencies, but it really does. It is susceptible to change at any moment.
Why is that significant to our analysis?
Because it really goes to the risk of circumvention argument. It goes to the fact that if other agencies knew how other agencies were getting around this, they could try as well.
The other question I had, and this may go more into in-camera materials than you feel is proper to go. But besides reviewing budget requests and legislative proposals, what other kinds of relationships does OMB have with agencies?
Oh, I can speak to that very clearly. Of course, you've talked about the two primary, budgetary as well as legislative. But OMB also assesses how effective agency programs are. OMB actually has rating tools that it uses in various administrations. They're called different names in different administrations, but where agencies have to rate how effective their programs are. School drug interdiction programs, customs border protection services, immigration enforcement services that the various agencies do, OMB rates those agencies and has those agencies do self-evaluations that they have to provide documentation how effective they are with their programs. So there actually is not just a budgetary and legislative, but is also looking at their programs to see how effective their programs are.
That's the manager, that's the M in OMB.
No, actually, that's the budget side. The budget.
That's
side,
the what?
That's the M side you're talking about is setting procurement policy and setting financial management policy. The OFPP, Office of Federal Procurement Policy, Office of Federal Financial Management. That's the management side. The program reviews are done by the budget side. The same people who determine who review the budget. The same people. The same people who review an agency's budget review how effective they are with that money.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, but
what? No, you go ahead.
What about transmission of information to agencies? In other words, I have the impression, I want to try to speak about it in a way that's not improper, that there are information sharing practices, and that that this list plays a role in OMB officials' conduct with respect to information sharing.
Okay. First of all,
correct?
Yes, it does. It does. And it's only shared within OMB at senior officials and for those people who work for Jim Jukes. And it is used to inform the discussion. It's used as a tool to inform a discussion that could be had about whether OMB wants to go back to Agency A and talk to them that maybe they need to come to us on a particular piece of legislation or particular proposal.
That's legislative review, but but in the process of legislative review and perhaps in other processes, the OMB, I take it, will transmit information to agencies.
Yes.
And it has, and this list, these lists, it may play a role in how it goes about doing that. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. The list is consulted, absolutely. It's consulted by OMB officials when they're communicating with the agencies, absolutely.
And it alters their conduct with respect to this. That is to say, put it this way, guides their conduct.
That's a better way of putting it. It certainly does guide their conduct, but OMB can decide that to revisit it at any time. So you're absolutely right. It does guide their conduct.
But you see, just because something's consulted by agency officials, and just because a document guides their behavior doesn't make it not exempt from FOIA.
Certainly.
Right? I mean, otherwise everything would be, nothing at OMB would be releasable. Correct? I mean, all your documents are
right. I mean, you're right about that.
Right.
But there are two exemptions that apply to this particular.
To what?
There are two exemptions, exemption 2 and exemption 5, that would apply to this document. Because this document really is a deliberative discussion about, it's basically OMB's intelligence on what the agencies think.
Okay,
about
we're going in circles now.
Okay.
I want to ask you one more structural question.
Sure.
You said there are these GS-13s, is that what you mentioned, who are responsible for the agencies, right?
Right. They're the OMB program examiners who review the agency's budgets and programs.
And they're at OMB. They're in OMB.
Right. These are OMB employees, right?
Okay. Do you have, does OMB have people like that for the agencies who are on this list?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it does. One thing I mentioned, one program examiner may have seven or eight agencies, but they're all, you know, they all, every agency has a program examiner who, if it's DOD, that may be their only one because it's a large agency, but if they're smaller agencies, they may have six or seven.
Right. But yes. You have them also for the agencies that are on the bypass list. You have GS-13s who are assigned the agencies that are on the bypass list.
Correct, yes.
Thank you. All right. We've gone far afield here, but it's all been informative and helpful to us, I trust. Is there anything else that you feel you must say that's not in your brief?
There's nothing else I must say, Your Honor, except that, again, we think that the lower court was correct in its affirmance on Exemption 2, and we also feel that you have sufficient information in front of you to make the decision with regard to Exemption 5 as well.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Thank you. That's a lot of new facts to respond to. On the issue of the agency being able to change this list, I want to note the date on the most recent of the records. That's dated February 20th, 2001. So the agency may be able to change this list. It has not done so in the last 80 years.
Emerged from the extensive interrogation, it is that apart from changing the list, the assertion of OMB is that conduct is not frozen under an existing list, that notwithstanding a particular list, OMB officials at a high level and a low level can do various things with respect to agencies on the list. They say it's part of their argument, which has played more of a role in connection with Exemption 5, but may be material here, that it's guidance on day-to-day relationships with agencies, and the characterization of an agency as a bypass agency does not mean the agency is as if it were not on Earth.
I have two responses to that. The first is a factual one. And I'd just like to point out that Public Citizen asked for any record that mentions an agency can bypass the clearance processes. And the only records that the agency turned up in response to that request were the 14 records at issue here, and then 8 other records, seven of which were communications about agencies on the statutory list of bypass agencies, so not about the agencies we're currently talking about, and one record from the National Council on Disability that was about review of a specific proposal and what OMB had said about that specific proposal. So unless National Council on Disability is on the list, the agency has no records ever about these communications, no emails, no letters about whether those agencies that are on this other list can bypass the clearance process, which I think calls into question whether they're ever actually having these communications either internally or with the other agencies
What is the exact characterization of the in the request? I guess I hadn't focused on that because
the request calls for all records listing the agencies or explaining or explaining that agencies or an agency may directly submit legislative or budget related materials to Congress without receiving OMB clearance or providing statutory authority for that. But so it does, we did ask for all records explaining that an agency may.
But it doesn't quite cover what we've been discussing here, does it? In other words, look at your number 3. Do you mm-hmm. have it in front of you?
Yes.
That may directly submit.
So it would not cover communications about saying that they cannot submit, but it would cover if OMB ever told an agency that it were allowed to directly submit without OMB clearance. P- Putting aside the factual issue, though, even if this is a list of agencies that OMB sometimes allows to submit directly to Congress, sometimes does not, that this is one where in specific occasions it makes the decision right there. This is still a list of agencies that OMB is treating differently from other agencies for some reason. And then going through the prongs of the two exemptions, if the Legislative Reference Division staff is being given a list of agencies saying, treat these agencies differently from other agencies, that makes that list predominantly internal. And if this
I'm
is
sorry,
a list
that, does what?
That makes that list not predominantly internal.
Wait, I'm sorry, you said, I missed the negative in that.
Sorry.
You say that's their position or your position?
No, my position is that a list of agencies where...
I get it, is not predominantly.
Is not predominantly internal,
okay,
yes.
Okay.
Well, but Crooker is all about staff people's behavior with respect to other people, right?
But it's really, Crooker is about... more about how to detect violations, how to enforce requirements.
Well, okay, so that's activity of subordinates with respect to external people.
But it's about enforcing the requirements. It's not about figuring out whether people need to go through those requirements in the first place.
Suppose the list here, let me just pursue this for a minute. Suppose it was factually, suppose it's true that OMB only uses the list to observe what the other agencies are doing. In other words, it's the only thing they use it for is to write internal memos and to report on how these agencies are acting. Then it would be predominantly internal, right? It would be just like Crocker. Correct?
I don't think so, because I think it's still describing what other agencies are doing, whereas Crooker was about describing what the agency itself should do to the other agencies. I would like to note that based on the description we just heard, though, that's not what these records are.
Yeah, I know. That's why I called it a hypothetical.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But your position is that you think that this is being used, that because it's being used, not just describes a category of agencies that are treated differently, but because it's used to affect the behavior of those, that's what makes it not predominantly internal?
Well, I think both describe, I think it would not be predominantly internal under either of those descriptions of the records.
Right. Okay.
And I think the hypothetical about it being used to figure out which agency does or does not, or that in certain specific situations does or does not have to submit, this is more like the prosecution guidelines in Jordan than like the manual in Crooker. And of course, the legal reasoning in Jordan was overturned by Crooker, but the Crooker court specifically stated that the prosecutorial guidelines in Jordan would come out the exact same way under the Crooker analysis, because guidelines on how to exercise discretion are as much a part of the law as are as important as a part of the law as the written law. So if what these are is the guidelines about when to allow these certain agencies to submit and when not, that is as much as the law as just having a list saying they never have to submit. I also want to touch on the second prong, that even if this is such a list of agencies that sometimes have to submit, sometimes do not have to submit, depending on the circumstances, that would not allow any other agency to circumvent the law. OMB in its brief says that it's other agencies not on the list that might circumvent the clearance requirements if OMB, if they knew which agencies were on the list. But knowing that OMB, based on circumstances that are unknown, sometimes allows, that there's a list of agencies that OMB sometimes allows to be exempt and sometimes does not tell any other agency that's not on the list how to circumvent the clearance requirements.
Don't other agencies all know from this litigation that there's a bunch of agencies out there that don't have statutory authority that are not complying? They already know that, don't they?
They know that OMB has stated that there are some agencies not required based on prior agencies.
They know that.
Are you saying that their interest in the circumstances or the characteristics of agencies that have had some element of bypass would be purely one of idle curiosity?
I don't see how any interest they would have would help them to circumvent the requirements themselves.
What do you? Is that because you don't think that in sort of normal human relationships people don't demand equal treatment with obviously conflicting definitions as to what's equal?
I think that people do demand equal treatment, but demanding equal treatment is not circumventing the law. It's not circumventing the requirements. It's asking to be treated differently under the requirements. And agencies have every right to go to OMB and say, please allow us, please treat us equally with the other agencies. And I understand that OMB may not want to engage in those conversations. Those are difficult conversations. But it can't withhold what it's doing from the public just to keep itself from having tough conversations explaining its practices.
As confined to cases of outright, unequivocal violation. You exclude where situations in a gray area come out.
I don't think lobbying for change in the law is.
No, we're not talking about change
violating.
In the law. We're talking about lobbying for change in treatment under, let's hypothesize, an ambiguous law. Trying to narrow your obligation.
I think if an agency goes to OMB and asks to narrow its obligation and OMB agrees that the agency has not in any way circumvented the requirements because OMB has agreed.
All right. We will take the case under advisement. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Bender, helping us out.